This episode is made possible by StackAdapt. Hey advertisers, is your design team pressed for time? Don't stress, don't you dare. Now you can build HTML5 display creatives without any design experience or additional software. Create ads with ease in StackAdapt's Creative Builder. Save time, work smart, not hard. Learn more at go.stackadapt.com/creativebuilder.
The biggest source of growth then in users and usage, at least here in the US, is going to be from, you know, younger generations. And Instagram is going to have to strike a fine balance between ensuring the safety of those users and generating revenues from the platform.
Hey gang, it's Monday, February 12th. Jasmine, Max, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by StackAdapt. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two people. Let's meet them. We start with Jasmine Emberg, who is our principal analyst covering everything social media based in California.
Hi, Marcus. Hi, everyone.
Hello, hello. And we also have with us one of our senior analysts on the digital advertising and media desk based in Philadelphia. It's Max Willens.
Yo.
Yo back, Max. Yo back. Today's fact. There are more possible variations of a game of chess than there are atoms in the known universe. Okay, why do we know this? Well, it became famous, apparently, when, I didn't realize it was famous, but it became famous in 1950. Mathematician Claude Shannon wrote his famous paper and came down to the conclusion that approximately 10 to the power of 120, so just an incalculable amount, of possible games of chess is more higher than the estimated number of atoms in the universe.
There are so many things you teach me on this podcast that I literally never thought about before.
Teach is generous. Overshare, more accurate.
I was being nice.
I know, thank you. So this is how a game kind of like starts to play out and how it gets to that number. So the number of distinct chess positions after White's first move is 20. So you can go, there's 16 pawn moves, or you can move one of the four knights out total in the game. After the second move, there are 400. Goes from 20 to 400 distinct chess positions after White goes and then Black goes. After White goes again, there are 5,000. After Black goes again, there are tens of thousands. And by the fifth move in the game, in the whole game, there are a potential 1 million variations of the board.
This makes me feel a lot better about deciding to stop playing chess. Every time I would try to think about play, I just thought, this is so complicated.
Yeah.
The mind boggles.
It is. I taught someone to play chess once, and then they destroyed me thereafter. I think I got hustled, is what happened. Talk about that later. Anyway, today's real topic, Meta. So, in today's episode, we're talking all about Meta, Facebook, Instagram, owned properties, and how they've done in Q4 and 2023, and we'll look ahead to this coming year. No other news today. So, folks, let's start with Meta overall. In Q4, they made close to $39 billion in ad revenues worldwide. That's up 24% year on year. The previous Q4 ad revenue had fallen by 4%. So it's gone from negative 4 in Q4 of 2022 to plus 24 in Q4 of 2023. So it's quite the turnaround. We're going to play a newly renamed game called Slice of Pie. It was formerly Blame Pie until Stuart said change the name because it's stupid. So we're going to create pie chart as to reasons why Meta managed to grow ad revenue 24% in Q4. Max, what does your pie chart of reasons look like?
So I have three slices that are interconnected, overlapping, you know, knotted together like
you've created a Venn diagram of reasons. Perfect.
But basically, I would say that the biggest one is just kind of continued strength in and gravitation of people toward buying things online. I know that sounds a little bit silly, but Meta has done so much to optimize Facebook and Instagram to compel people to buy things on their platform, either via shops or via deep linking to advertisers' sites. And this is borne out in their Q4. You know, they do break out to a certain extent which advertising verticals are contributing most of the growth. And e-com, which is already their largest, was also one of the chief drivers of the growth. And then you kind of thread that in with China, which, you know, people that follow Meta very, very closely have known this for a while, but this started becoming quite apparent in the second half of last year that Chinese brands and manufacturers have basically like learned the American D2C playbook and are running it to great success on platforms, you know, Meta's platforms in particular. Mm-hmm. Susan Li, Meta's CFO, said that they contributed to 10% of revenue overall in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
Which is, you know, not nothing.
Yeah.
That's real, real growth. Overall, 5 percentage points of the growth that they saw this year were from China alone. And what's crazy too is that this also, just to sort of, the thing that speaks to how widely emulated and replicated this strategy was, in calls with investment analysts after they reported their earnings a couple of weeks ago, Susan Li also mentioned that 2/3 of their Chinese revenue came from advertisers that are outside of their top 10. So this isn't just Temu, you know, pouring gallons and gallons of money into this system. This is lots and lots of smaller manufacturers, smaller brands, you know, just finding easy money by using the system that Meta's built.
Max, how big of a risk factor do you think that is going into 2024 then?
You know, it's funny that you asked that because I was going to point to the fact that they should not expect this kind of upward momentum to continue, I don't think. And they're cognizant of that. They cautioned during that same call that the phrase that Susan Li used was that this growth would be hard to replicate. Mm-hmm. And in light of the, you know, major shock that's coming to the Chinese economy because of the problems in their property sector, the, you know, just kind of continued sluggishness that you see in lots of different sectors, I think it's reasonable to expect that, you know, it's going to be another big slice for Meta's business next year, but it might not, you know, grow from 10 to 16 or something like that, or 10 to 20. And I think that, you know, it's reasonable to ask, though, whether other kind of emerging economies might not follow a similar playbook. Like, why shouldn't a bunch of manufacturers in Vietnam try a similar playbook? And then the final thing is just the year of efficiency, which, you know, I think a lot of people, when Mark Zuckerberg declared that 2023 would be the year of efficiency, they said, you would say that, wouldn't you? You know, with your declining revenues and your, you know, general levels of alarm floating around your business. But you got to give credit where it's due. I mean, in the fourth quarter, again, kind of pulling from that earnings release, they raised their revenue 25% and dropped their expenses by 8%. They mm-hmm. doubled their operating margin. And there's just no way around the fact that their efforts to, you know, slash costs in non-core areas, I think a lot of it is in their sort of sales infrastructure as more and more stuff gets automated, has really been good for them.
Headcount down 20% as well from last year.
That's correct. They did say that they're going to start kind of bumping that up in 2024, but a lot of it is going to be, you know, engineers. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be hiring a bunch of, you know, not very helpful salespeople. And the other big piece that's, I think, really important to flag here is that one of the ways that they managed to drive or get revenue back in gear was by just juicing their ad load and dropping the prices. Every single quarter of 2023 prior to Q4, you had seen, you know, 20%+ increases in supply of advertising across their family of apps, and usually a high single digit percentage drop in the price of that inventory. In Q4, they had it, in fact, raise. It was modest, it was 2%, but still that breaks a really notable streak, and one that I think that they seem pretty confident that that's a streak that they can continue, even though Reels, while it's, you know, revenue positive now, it still seems like it's not driving that much real value for them.
So, Max, there were no shares in your answer, but it was a good answer. So it's not.
I can carve those three up if you want.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. 50% e-com growth, 25% China, 25% efficiency.
Very nice. Jasmine, what do you think of that pie?
The only piece that I had added to my pie was really just the economy and improvements within the digital ad market overall. You know, I think that increased advertiser demand. And one of the things that we're seeing, I mean, Snap reported earnings yesterday, is that this recovery has been somewhat uneven, or very much uneven, with some of these big players just getting bigger, Meta, of course, being one of them. But yeah, I mean, the year of efficiency really paid off for Meta. There's, you know, can say what you want about the company. It may not be super innovative anymore. It certainly has its fair share of challenges, but it knows how to execute. And to me, it really proved that in 2023.
A few numbers quickly from me that stood out. One, total ad revenue, when you zoom out, 2023 grew 16%. Last year, revenue had fallen by 1%. So quite the turnaround. Two, they added 25 million users in Q4. They're now at 2.1 billion worldwide. That's for Facebook. In 2022, they added 70 million. In 2023, they added 110 million daily active users. And they also added some in North America, which we thought couldn't grow anymore. And then also their average revenue per user significantly up 20% year on year worldwide, up 16% in that all important, highly lucrative North American region. Profit also was triple what it was from a year earlier, which is also good. Let's move to Instagram. Our colleague Minda Smiley just wrote a piece titled "How Instagram Evolved Under Meta and What's Next." We estimate that the platform made $25 billion in US ad revenue last year. It'll be up 17%. Our forecasting team have just over half of American smartphone users on Instagram. But Jasmine, what's next for the platform?
Instagram has been picking up Facebook's slack in terms of users and usage for years. I mean, if you just think back to how important it was that Facebook purchased Instagram back in 2012, I think it's really made that clear. It's also really important to Facebook's business. You know, I mean, Instagram accounts for a relatively significant share of Meta's overall revenues. And Max started to allude to this when he talked about Reels. And yes, there, you know, are some signs that there is a ceiling to, you know, Reels monetization, and something that we pointed out already in Q3. But it, you know, it has become a strong part of Instagram's business and the short video landscape. I think the biggest challenge, or one of the biggest challenges for Instagram going into this year, is the issue surrounding young people and teens in particular. I would say that Instagram is to Gen Z kind of what Facebook is to millennials. It's, you know, this necessary platform, but not one where they're, you know, necessarily spending most of their time. And the biggest source of growth then in users and usage, at least here in the US, is going to be from, you know, younger generations. And Instagram is going to have to strike a fine balance between ensuring the safety of those users and generating revenues from the platform.
Yeah, Instagram, you mentioned contributing to a significant share of Meta's business. They're approaching a tipping point. They don't release Instagram revenue numbers, so we have to kind of, we pass those out with our forecasting team. But we estimate that this year, that Meta is getting 52% of its ad revenues from Facebook and 48% from Instagram. Next year, it will be pretty much neck and neck. And so we don't have 2026 yet, but if you play that trend forwards, that 2026, in theory, could potentially be the first year that Meta is making more money from Instagram than Facebook, if all trends continue.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is to see how successful Instagram is in essentially pursuing the path that, you know, TikTok is on and maybe kind of struggling on. I say struggling advisedly, and I would say, you know, I mean it in a relative sense, because their ad business is also doing very, very well. But they basically, their mission now is to sort of become an entertainment app where you can shop. You see the shop ads are now at a $2 billion run rate across Meta. There's, you know, that also includes Facebook, but I would imagine most of that happens on Instagram. And what's going to be interesting is just try to compare and contrast the balance that the two apps can strike. There's seems to be a lot of anecdotal evidence that TikTok is pushing TikTok shop a little too hard. And you get a lot of people who are kind of complaining that every time they log on, they are inundated with people hawking cheap crap at them. And Instagram so far has managed to sort of avoid that. But we'll see. I mean, again, to your point, as Facebook sort of stops being a growth engine, you can see that even, again, Meta is going to stop breaking Facebook user numbers out. Because they,
that was huge.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really notable. And it's, in a way, it's kind of surprising it took them this long to do it, because they've been sort of getting beaten up by people like Jasmine and myself. You know, it's no longer a fast growing, you know, object of intrigue for the tech press. And so anyway, it's just going to be really interesting to see which company can kind of out execute the other in terms of pursuing this shared vision of what they want their platforms to be.
So let's talk about one of the other platforms, a pretty new one, and that's Threads. Our Jeremy Goldman just wrote that Meta's Twitter clone Threads is experiencing somewhat of a resurgence, saying download figures for the app tripled in December, according to App Figures data. The app secured top spots in download charts across major app stores. And during Meta's Q4 earnings call, Mr. Zuckerberg said Threads now has 130 million MAUs, up nearly 30% from Q3. Jasmine, what's going on with Threads at the moment?
Well, First of all, I think the word resurgence is maybe a little too strong. One of the things that happened in December, of course, was that Threads launched in Europe. So that could help account for the surge in downloads as well as the increase in users. And it's very possible that what happened here in the US could be replicated in the EU in terms of having a lot of people sign up during the hype cycle who are super excited and then having that engagement drop. Still, 130 million monthly users isn't bad for an app that's, you know, just over 6 months old at this point. But I do think that 2024 is going to be the make it or break it year for Threads. It's still a far cry from that path to 1 billion users that Mark Zuckerberg was talking about when Threads launched here in July. And, you know, if it doesn't get close to that and Meta doesn't have a path to monetization, I could see it folding it into Instagram. Mm.
That seems very credible to me. I would say that I feel like Threads' real existence is opportunistic and more of an insurance play than a major focus. I mean, to me, the fact that they joined the Fediverse, which is this kind of protocol that allows Blue Sky and Mastodon and now Threads to talk to each other, is a sign that they're not serious about this. If they thought that this was a market that was really worth owning and dominating, that they would close everyone out and try to crush those people instead of trying to play nice with them. So
that's a good point. And did you see the news today that Blue Sky is getting ready to launch?
Interesting. All right, folks, let's get some grades for Meta's Q4 and also their 2023 performance. Jasmine.
I am so happy that I can give an A. You know how I feel about grading these companies, but
you hate
I'm Meta an A, and I'm joyous that I can do that.
A for Q4 and 2023?
Yes.
A's for everyone. A's for everything. Max.
Yeah, I'm a grouch by
he is.
by nature.
At least he's Donald.
It's the best.
And a stingy grader, but you know, like Jasmine, they get an A with a gold star.
Wow.
It's very hard to find any reason for, you know, penalty in what they've done over the last 12 months.
Okay. Well, I mean, you might be thinking to yourself, listeners, you know, are they going to talk about the Senate Judiciary Committee and that hearing and the fact that the CEOs from Meta, Snap, TikTok, Discord, X were all there testifying about and answering questions to senators and also to family members of kids who are harmed by using social media. But we're going to talk about that, about young people and social media use, in an episode at the end of the month with Minda Smiley, who also covers social for us. So look out for that episode. But we did want to quickly mention some recent news: Meta announcing that Facebook, Instagram, and Threads will start labeling all fake AI images generated by other companies' AI tools. They already label AI images generated by their own systems. But Jasmine, you're up. Your reaction.
Yeah, this is actually really great timing for you to bring this one up, because I was just researching some of this for my News and Politics on Social Media report that's coming out later this month.
Timely.
I mean, yeah, very timely. I think, you know, most people say when they're asked how they want platforms to moderate content, that labeling is usually their number one choice, at least for AI-generated misinformation from the research that I've seen. I mean, my own personal opinion about this is labeling is retroactive. And once this information is out in the world, it's really impossible to rein in, and the damage is kind of done whether you stick a label on it or not. And overall, when you're thinking about sort of the different policies across the social media companies, especially going into an election year or being in an election year as we are right now, they're too little, too late, and these companies just really aren't equipped to deal with harmful content, misinformation in the AI era. They weren't equipped to deal with it in the pre-AI era either. So,
Great points. Max, thoughts?
Yeah, I feel like it's important that a voice as big as Meta's is, you know, saying this is something that needs to be done and something that needs to be looked at. But this is also all of Jasmine's points are super on point. And I would just add that this is basically, you know, just a turn in a cat and mouse game. You know, appending metadata to media is not difficult, and anybody who's determined to, you know, sow confusion or disseminate misinformation is not going to have much trouble kind of getting around this at first. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see what this does to other large platforms that are responsible for sharing content like YouTube and Google, and how they respond to this, because I think that they have a lot to think about on this front as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned is this easy to work around. Professor Sohail Faizi, director of the Reliable AI Lab at the University of Maryland, suggesting such a system is easy to get around. Also saying that it can create a high rate of false positives as well. And Meta also acknowledging its tool will not work for audio or video, even though much of the concern about AI fakes is focused on these types of media. Its current workaround for that is saying that people should labeled the posts for audio and video themselves, and that there'll be penalties, maybe penalties, if they fail to do so. Yeah, why now? It seems as though there's been pressure from a lot of folks, but particularly its own oversight board for Meta to develop stronger AI-generated content policies as election season rolls around in the US and the rest of the world. A lot of this stemming from a video centered around the president that was manipulated. But Meta said that it was fine. It did comply with its manipulated media policy. And so the board was saying maybe the policy is too focused on how content is created and not on the potential harms from the altered content, such as damaging electoral processes. That is all we've got time for today's episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you, Jasmine.
Thank you, Marcus. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you to Max.
Always a pleasure, Marcus. Thank you.
And thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stuart runs the team, Sophie, who does our social media. And thanks to everyone for listening in. We hope to see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by StackAdapt.